Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Don't Fuck It Up with me, your host, Kyle, and I have a very special guest with us this week. You will recognize them from RuPaul's Drag Race, and she is also a rap artist, a burlesque, a queer artist all around, we'll just say. I want to introduce you to Aja.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm doing well. I think it's funny that you brought up burlesque. I haven't done burlesque in so long, but I'll take it, honestly. It will get me paid to do it.
Well, we have to encompass all of your talents when we describe you, I think.
Oh, so we should have labeled me as a master chef instead.
We can't put you in one box. No one's just a drag queen anymore. Everyone's kind of branches off into everything.
Oh, I think that's a smart thing to do. I feel like if you're just idle waiting around to lip sync at the club, you really won't, not that you won't have a future, but you really won't be able to stand through when, you know, Drag Race's momentum and all that stuff is over, because there won't be as much representation. So I don't know how to explain it. I've always sort of felt like, I feel like we're starting off the whole interview as controversial. But I feel like we're still at a point where there's not a big space for what society knows as drag performance in mainstream yet. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't really, well, I was going to say you can't lip sync at the VMAs, but you can, and people probably have. But, you know, like, you can't really, like, have a drag queen doing impersonation or lip syncing at the VMAs from what, you know, we've seen so far. Not mm-hmm. because I don't want it to happen. I mean, in a perfect world, you know, that stuff would happen and people would have the platform. But I know you didn't start asking questions yet. But
No, that's perfect. I think because Drag Race now kind of rolls out so many seasons once after the other, if you're not smart about how you use your time during your season or shortly after, you're kind of screwed in a way, because there's a batch of 13 or 14 new girls that are on TV that are kind of taking the limelight that you just had.
Yeah, I think the smartest thing to do, I think what people need to realize, especially going on Drag Race, is that when you're on Drag Race and you're a contestant, the fans you accumulate through the show, they're not your fans. They're the fans of the show. And I think people get confused and they think, oh, well, these are my fans. And, you know, some people, after they get off the show, they treat their entire career as a RuPaul's Drag Race career, if that makes sense. And, mm-hmm. they, you know, they'll only do Drag Race affiliated events because they know those are the ones all the fans come to. I think the smarter thing to do is, yes, to take advantage of that and make your money and do what you got to do, but also find a way to create your own following where, you know, people can say, oh, I'm not really a fan of Drag Race, but I'm a fan of yours. Or like where people could say, like, you know what, I haven't seen a single Drag Race episode in my life, but your art speaks to me, or your drag speaks to me, or whatever, because then you have your own personal following. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's how you utilize the platform. I mean, yeah. Sure, everyone does everything differently. But what's the point of having such exposure to all these people and then, you know, and then a new season comes out or something else happens and they don't look at you as a performer. They look at you as just a contestant on a reality TV show. And then you're gone, and all the work you did was for nothing. And next thing you know, 6 months later, you're performing lip syncing fucking Britney Spears at your local bar. And it happened to some of the most talented people, because I think people really think Drag Race is a drag competition and they don't realize this is like an actual reality television platform that you can use to sell yourself.
Yeah. I think it falls short in people's minds when they don't take it into account that it is reality TV and it's a highly produced reality TV show, that nothing is real, but things can be produced and edited in a way for TV. With the queens that get the kind of hate mail and all that kind of stuff for simply being on a TV show. Yes, they've done something on that TV show and their actions can speak for that, but I don't get why people take things so seriously.
You know, it's funny because people encourage the queens not to take themselves seriously, mm-hmm. but then take it so fucking seriously. And it's sort of ironic because at the same time, I feel like drag is an art form, you know, no matter what drag has done yet, because drag has done some amazing things so far in the mainstream. there's still a majority of the world that doesn't really take drag as seriously and looks at it such as like a novelty or almost like a clown performance and not really like a viable art form, which, you know, doesn't make sense at this point because people are making millions off of drag. But what shocks me more so is like how people still treat it almost like, people won't treat it like an art form. To them, it's like, oh my God, haha, there's a man in a dress. And I was having this conversation with someone and they were talking about, they were like, oh, why do you think that there's no trans people on Drag Race? Or why do you think that there's such a weird, like, specific structure? And my only response to that was, you know, they have this formula and they're feeding into what society thinks drag is or should be. You know, there's a lot of people out there who've never done drag or even seen a drag show in their life, and they will tell you what drag is. Like, they will tell you, like, you could be doing drag, you could be the fucking drag connoisseur, they will tell you what drag is. They're like, no, you're wrong. No, it's a man in a dress. You're wrong. And, you know, until that shit is over, like, I mean, not all of it, because you can never just, like, throw all of that under the rug. But until that type of behavior really kind of, like, sets to the side and people become a little less ignorant toward, like, drag as an art form in different ways, towards the art form and then within the community itself, we won't really have the inclusion on the television show that people want. And we also won't have a lot of things. We won't have bigger opportunities. You know, it sucks. I just want to see trans people on Drag Race already. The trans community literally pioneered the art form. It almost just doesn't make sense that, you know, at this day and age, you know, you have trans people who are literally struggling for work, and drag is really the only thing that they can do without having to put themselves in danger.
Yeah.
And, you know, the biggest platform for it is just not accessible. And I've said this on public forums such as Twitter and stuff, and people have given me backlash, like, well, then why don't you create the platform? Why don't you do this? And why don't y'all work for it? And it's just like, well, let me check. Maybe because I don't have like multi-million dollar company backing me, and I don't have the money to invest into creating a TV show that already has the visibility of millions of viewers.
Touching on that, what she said earlier about people not really being knowing what drag is, obviously just being a fan of this reality TV show, do you think that might be a reason why the producers or the casting team of the show won't put trans people on it, because they're worried about their fans being confused of the transformation and all that kind of stuff?
I think that what they're failing to say is that Drag Race is not really a drag competition. It's really a reality television show about drag in relation to RuPaul's career. Because there's this weird criteria and standard for like doing these weird, stupid fucking acting challenges that don't make sense, and doing all these, like, all the musicals are RuPaul themed, and everything is like, it's literally, RuPaul's Drag Race is a competition of who can be the next Ru. It's not the next drag superstar. It's who can fit RuPaul's shoes. Mm-hmm. And RuPaul is a cis man who gets in, you know, he doesn't get in drag. People put him in drag. And, you know, I think what RuPaul's done for himself as a business person is excellent and finessed, and it works for them. However, for people who are also indulged in the art form of drag, it's sort of them going on the show thinking they're about to showcase like everything that makes them them. But no, sometimes they are able to, and sometimes what they do that makes them them is not being shown on television because it just was never part of RuPaul's career. So like, it's like, if you know, if I want to, like, for example, if I want to be a rapper, how many rap challenges have there been in RuPaul's Drag Race history? Two. There was one in the beginning of season 12 and one in season 6. That is lit. Yeah. And people are like, oh, well, what about the other music challenges? And nobody wants to fucking rap over Kitty Girl. The closest thing that they've had to like a rap challenge is honestly the I'm That Bitch one from
yes.
I don't know, watching the new season. But with the casting, I think the casting of the show has gone so downhill. It's not the girls, it's the combinations of cast that they're putting in. They just don't make sense to me. I feel like all the girls are so talented. It's just like the combinations of the girls aligned with the shitty challenges, just kind of like, it's giving me America's Next Top Model vibes at this point. It's just sort of repetitive. And they found a formula, but that formula is like, okay, like switch it up a little bit. Like, let's see something crazier. Let's see something different. And as a person who was on the show, although I have conflicting opinions with like what things that have RuPaul has said in the public, I do try to support the show. At the same time, I try to stay true to what I believe morally. I would love to see artists who are not fitting the binary of what drag is. I would love to see more fluid artists. I would love to see maybe a person who does drag and it's a little less feminine. Like, I'm talking about like way more masculine, but maybe not. You know, I want to see different things. I want to see someone who's going to give us some real representation. I would like to see Black queens that are not just in the pageant circuit or from the South. Why can't they? We have like a plethora of Black queens from New York. Why are they not getting cast? Like, I mean, we've had like excellent queens like Monet and Bob, but like, there's so much more. There's literally so many other like Black fashion queens that haven't been on the show yet. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many. You know, and also there's white queens who do like the Southern bucking stuff. Why are they not getting on the show? Because they don't fit the I don't know. To me, there's just so much like the weirdness. Like, I know white queens who do the same shit like maybe not as good as her, but like shit, the same shit like Kennedy Davenport does. But like, as a viewer of Drag Race, you could never imagine that. You'd be like, wait, what?
No.
And yeah, people would be like, wait, like is that sort of like racist to think? No, it's just that the show has never shown that type of representation. And there's just always these weird narratives that come in to play. And like, you know, we've already known that there's gonna be this skinny white fashion girl. There's always at least one per season. There's always gonna be like the weird, like, you know, campy looking older than she is, like mm-hmm. white queen. There's always gonna be like, you know, I think this is something that made like Drag Race UK different, because you had the queens like Vinegar Strokes, who was sort of this campy, like, you know, she was this campy Black queen who was like a little older. And that was something that the American series hasn't really had.
Yeah.
And as a viewer watching that series, I didn't really watch the whole season, but when I was watching some of it, I was like, whoa, like there's sorts of representation that we didn't really have. We had something wrong.
Yeah.
She was like a little, like a slightly on the plus size Asian girl, but she had like this kind of urban, like kind of like urban but quirky aesthetic. Again, something we've never seen. I heard a lot of people who watched UK said they're like, oh, this was refreshing. Like, I feel like this was better than what seasons have been in America lately.
Yeah.
And you had Crystal, who never shaved her chest, and they never told her nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's stuff that we should see in America as well. We should see those different tropes and those different categories of drag. Because, I don't know, I'm just getting bored of the same fucking formula.
Yeah, it seems like they have like a pre-made formula and they just kind of pick and slot that person into it every season now. Like you says, they have them same stereotype people and they're just kind of picking to fill that role.
It sucks because I want to see more people succeed and who they are and what they do. And I feel like sometimes like I want to see a season without a white fashion queen. I really would love to just yeah. see a season without it. Like, not that I have anything against like those girls. Like, I just feel like it's been done on the show. And once Aquaria went on that show, it was like, honestly, in my opinion, it was like the height
yeah.
of the white fashion queen, because I feel like Aquaria like bodies that. She takes that concept and that trope that she fits into, and not only is she unique and she's like pretty much perfect, it's like after that I was like, oh, you can't really top this. And it doesn't mean that other people can't excel in that one specific like niche, but I don't know. It's just like, once you already had a really high, you want to break from it.
Yeah. So let's start talking about you. We'll get into way back when. When did you start your career in drag, essentially?
I want to say, but it was like 10 years ago. I was really young. I was in the nightlife in New York, and I really started off as kind of playing with makeup, and just like, I didn't have like a Halloween or a Pride story because I was underage. So I just played with makeup, and I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I don't think I ever had an intention of being performative. I really was just like, I really liked dressing up, and you know, eventually I had a friend who was like, oh, there's a drag competition, like we should go do it. And I was like, oh my god, okay, let's do it. And I started doing these drag competitions looking crazy as fuck. I didn't have some fancy like someone put me in drag and da-da-da. Like, no, I literally was looking crazy going to the club, and I was just really ambitious. And the thing about me is that if I feel like I'm bad at something, I'm going to keep doing it until I'm good at it. I think that's just Capricorn in me. So I just kept going on and on and on. And then I started winning the competitions. And eventually, like, I started getting booked. And then I started getting paid bookings. And then from there, it was like, I worked from the bottom to the top. By the time I was like 20, I already had like 4 weekly shows. And then I was already traveling by 21. I was already like going to other states in the United States. And then I think when I was 21 or 22, I got on Drag Race. Like, it was just like, you know, and it was funny because, like, for me, it wasn't really, like, I think sometimes, a lot of times, like, there's girls who, like, sort of obsess over getting on Drag Race. They're like, oh, my God, I want to get on so bad. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, it was more about I wasn't particularly in an excellent living situation at the time. And I was like, you know, if I got on the show, that would be really cool because I get the fuck out of here. And By the circumstances of fate, got on the show and was like, holy shit. I was like, I didn't think this was going to happen. You know, went on season 9, broke as a motherfucker, was literally like, I can't afford anything. I have no resources. I have no friends. People are like, you're from New York. I'm like, girl, I thought when I went on Drag Race, it was a competition of drag. And I left realizing it wasn't. I went in and I was like, everything that I had was made by me. Done by me. And then I looked around and I saw people taking out their fancy wigs that were made by Wigs and Grace and made by like their friends and their costumes that were made for them. And I was like, oh, this is that. And I was like, well, I don't know why I didn't think about that. I was just like, I also, you know, honestly, I didn't have the resources to get everything made. My good old pal B Calla, Bradley Callahan, he's an amazing designer. He was living in New York at the time, and now he lives in LA. He invited me to his studio. He made my unicorn outfit, and when I went to pick it up, he was like, you know, do you have anything else that you need? And I told him, I was like, honestly, I don't. And he was like, well, if you want to go through my stuff, you can. And I took a few items. I took something from my Club Kid runway and for my entrance look, and that was pretty much it. I didn't have anything else. And I took that rainbow kimono that Gaga had wore. But that was about it. Like, I didn't have anything else there. So it was just crazy. Like, I remember going home and being just so depressed because I was like, wow, that was terrible. And, you know, then there was this whole weird theme of like this like fucking glow up. And people were like, yeah, glow up. And I was like, no, I just have money. And like now I can buy stuff the same way everybody else, like nothing that everyone else had money, but everybody else had at least resources. And I felt like during the season when I was touring, I was getting these weird reactions from fans and even the producers of the show where they're like, wow, you look so good. Like, what happened? And I'm like, I just have money. They're like, yeah, but like even your makeup, you're this. And I was like, I always try to explain to people too, like, the show made like the whole like weird Facetune narrative for me. That was never a narrative I made for myself.
When you had said about not intentionally trying or wanting to be on, like aspiring to be on the show, what made you audition then? Obviously, was it just your situation that you thought that would give you a break from, I guess.
Part of it was the me really wanting to get out, me wanting to be financially stable, me wanting to feel like a little more safe. Mm-hmm. I just felt like I wasn't really in a safe environment at the time. And like, it wasn't safe for me, like physically, mentally, or emotionally. And I just felt so trapped. Like, I felt like I had no control of my life. And I felt like I had nothing. And I, you know, when you get to that point, you know, it's almost like looking at the fucking lotto. Like, I was like, oh, like, this is my chance to get out. And it seemed so surreal. It seemed like a dream. And I remember putting a little bit of money that I had saved up into making a fucking audition tape. And then, like, you know, with the help of photographer Santiago Felipe from New York, we, like, put together this, like, audition tape. And I was like, okay, I was so proud of my tape. You have no idea. I was going around showing everybody. I was like, look at my tape. It's good. My tape. I remember somebody showed me, people were showing me other people's tapes, even people who got on Drag Race later after I did. I was like, that tape is terrible. I was like, wow. I think ultimately what sold me onto the show anyway was not the drag. It really was the personality I put into my audition tape. Mm-hmm. I think that's what sold me. I don't think they're looking for drag or just drag anyway. I mean, come on, yeah. Look at some of the people who get on the show. They're looking for personalities. They're looking for different types of people. Yeah. And I guess my story spoke to them. I just like kind of like what I was myself in that audition tape. I just said, look, everyone is stupid and I'm cool. Like, that's literally what my tape was like. It was like, I was like, you know, I've seen people's audition tapes and sometimes I feel like they come off very desperate. They're like, pick me, I'm amazing, I'm good at everything. My tape was literally like, I'm good at everything, I know I'm good at everything, but I just want to let you know that I'm smarter than everyone. And nobody has common sense, and doing drag has taught me that people are dumb. Like, literally, that was what my tape was like. And you know, I also found ways to try to make it different. Like, I wanted to sell myself not just as a drag artist at the time, but I literally wanted to sell myself in a package that I know they couldn't refuse. Mm-hmm. So when I got the first call, I was surprised, but I wasn't shocked. Like, I was like, oh, I was like, okay. And literally like a month after that, I'm already on the show. So it's just like.
So from getting the call to actually that you're on the show, that you've been cast to shooting, how long was that period?
It's kind of crazy how it all happens. I submitted the tape maybe like in March or April, like around that time. I submitted my tape in the first week when they asked for it. And then I had just came back from Chicago and I had to do a show at Industry Bar in New York called Queen. And we were doing Whitney Houston night, and I was doing it with Monet, actually. It was me, Monet, and a few other queens. And I remember I was over it. The rehearsal was like stupid. I was locked outside for like 20 minutes. And literally the host of the show was being a fucking bitch to me. Like, I was just like, this is so stupid. I got home and I legit maybe had like two, three hours before I had to get ready. So I remember I sent my roommate to go get me one of those like tank tops that Whitney Houston wears. She wears the denim shorts and tank tops, so they all had to wear them. And I was like, okay, I have to get ready in 30 minutes. What am I going to do? I mean, what else would anybody do? I was going to masturbate. And then literally, I get a phone call. Literally, I have my dick in my hand and I get a phone call. And it's a 323 number. And I just came back from Chicago and I got into a fight with my Airbnb person. So I thought that they reported me to Airbnb. And I was like, oh, just what I need. So I'm like, oh, here, dick in hand, like, hello. And they're like, hello, is this Aja? And also my Airbnb was under Aja. So I was like, yeah, who's this? And they're like, this is so-and-so from World of Wonder, or I know from Drag Race. And I was like, wait, what? We're from Drag Race. And as my quickly gone flaccid penis flops out of my hand, I remember just getting up and thinking, what do I do? But like, I didn't realize that they were still on the phone. So I was like, oh yeah, yeah. I was like, I'm here. And then from there on out, I remember I got off the phone, I cried. I was like, oh my God. It was like a glimpse of freedom. I was like,
yeah.
this is a moment. Like, this is like, my life is about to maybe change. I don't know. I feel like someone's dangling the keys to freedom in front of me. And I remember calling my mom. I was like, I can't like say this is for real or not. I remember my roommate got back and I told him, dude, like I got a call. And he was just like, wait, what? Really? And then I called Candy and I was like, Candy, I got a call. And she was like, what, really? And then I called Dolly and she was like, what? I'm calling everybody. And the next thing you know, everyone in New York knew that I got a call. And of course we were on a non-disclosure agreement. And I was just like, well, I was like, that's a farewell. I started keeping it more secret afterwards because I forgot that, you know, I got excited, but I forgot that, you know, people hate you and they don't want you to succeed. After that, it was about 2-3 weeks and then I called them and I was like, so am I on the next level or not? And they were like, well, we were going to give you a call tomorrow to tell you about your psych eval, but I guess we can give you your information today. I was like, thank you. Did the psych eval. And then like a month later, I got my first call in May. Mm-hmm. I got my confirmation call in June. And I remember I was buying contact solution. And I was with, I remember I had their number saved on my phone and I was with Momo, Candy and Dolly. And I remember I got, the call came up and I was like, it's the yes or no call. Because if you make it to the last round, they don't tell you this, but like you get a no call. Like, so I didn't know if it was going to be the yes call, the no call, or the alternative call when they're like, okay, so you're not officially cast, but you're an alternative. So if something happens where some person can't make it or whatever reason, then you will be put on.
Yeah.
So I got the call and I remember I walked away and I answered and they were like, you're on. And then I was just like, okay. I immediately most people would be excited. I was like, oh shit, what the fuck am I going to do? I had a show that night. I remember being at my show, like, stressed the fuck out, waiting for that list of costumes to come. I was like, I don't even know if I have the money for this. I don't know what the fuck is going to happen. Because, you know, the viewers, they don't see what goes into it. They see what turns the corner. And then they judge it. And they judge it really harshly. They judge it as if they have sewn together garments. Like, they went to fashion school. They're like, you know what? You know, it's very the I don't have to be a chef to know food tastes like shit type of like personality. And it's like, yeah, but you can also have the palate of a 5-year-old, meaning you have no taste.
Very true.
So, I mean, that comparison out the window. But I think people don't see the work it takes to get there. So, and that's why there's sort of a weird classism that goes into being a viewership to the viewership of Drag Race, because a lot of times I've heard people say things like, oh, these queens look cheap or these queens look like this. And it's like, well, they don't come for money. Like, do you really expect queens from fucking, I don't know, the back swamps to be coming in and having like top-notch costumes? And then people will be like, well, and they have to bring everything else. And it's like, okay, but people don't expect the white fashion queen to be funny.
And during your time actually shooting the show, your first episode, obviously you had Lady Gaga as the judge. How was that? Was it something you expected when she walked in? Did you think it was her?
Or no, was it just kind of... I'm a dumb bitch. I didn't think it was her. I was like, who is this Lady Gaga impersonator? I thought it was Plastic Tiara. I'm not going to lie. And this is why. She came in and she had these like really sharp cheekbones and like she was pretty short. And I was like, oh my God. And at the time, I knew Plastic Tiara sort of like, she was like this Asian girl who was doing like this very Miss Fame-esque makeup at the time. And she was like looking really snatched and gorgeous. And I was like, wait, is that the Plastic Tiara? And then I was like, I didn't know. I also was so tired. And it was like, I had not slept that night before. So I was just like, whatever. Kimora is there like, it's Gaga. I'm also like, people were like, are you really so nonchalant about meeting Gaga? I had met Gaga prior to that moment. And but I think one thing I should say though is that I think Gaga's really nice and she's a very humble person and she's very awesome to work with. And she has nothing but nice things to say, even when you shouldn't have something nice to say. So she was very cool and it was awesome.
And you had mentioned the rainbow kimono that Gaga wore.
Yes, you know, I
brought that for that challenge, right?
No, I didn't even know she wore it until literally like 3 days before I left. I was packing and Candy was helping me pack. And Candy was like a Gaga super fan. Like, the Yes Gaga bitches who used to follow her. Candy, there's a photo of Candy on my Twitter right now, like before buying Gaga. And she goes, "Bitch, where did you get this?" And I was like, "What?" And she's like, "Oh my God, this is the rainbow kimono that Gaga wore." And I was like, "Oh, really?"
So if you knew that Gaga had worn that kimono, how come you didn't wear it for that challenge?
Because I didn't have everything I needed to make it a complete look. Like, she also wore a helmet, and she had like a dog, just walking a dog in the photo. And like, I wanted it to be like accurate. And the thing is also, I packed that outfit for my rainbow runway.
So there
there was a rainbow runway, and it was like it was a kimono, and it was all rainbow spray painted, and it had a picture of a dog on it. And when you opened it, there was supposed to be like this really high pussy leotard, and it had like a cat on acid on it. So it was like, it was probably my favorite outfit that I brought with me. And I remember, like, I was most sad that I didn't get to wear those. All my good outfits were like going to come in toward the end. It's like really not my fault that they made the runway order.
Doing that first episode, was it kind of surreal? Were you kind of anxious of what was happening around you? Obviously, you've been in the nightlife and stuff before that, but shooting a TV show is a lot different.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I didn't know there was so much touching up of the makeup that you had to do on TV, which was really weird because everyone was just literally touching up their makeup every 5 seconds. And I was there. I was just there looking like a grease pit. Like, I looked so oily. And I also had I had sinusitis. I was so sick. Like, I was coughing up and spitting up phlegm every 5 seconds. Like, I had, like, a fever. Like, I was so sick. And being in a cold-ass studio when you're sick is depressing. And then I was going to my fucking hotel room, realizing I had nothing and nobody. I had no connection to the world. And then, like, it was also, like, being in a safe environment for the first time in, like, 5 years. I was like, girl. I was crying in my hotel room for like the first week. Like, I was just like, I don't even know what's going on. I was like, honestly, mentally not there. And especially the hotel room, like, if you ask me what happened in the hotel room while I was on season 9, I barely remember anything. I do remember though that, and I hope the PAs don't get in trouble for me saying this, but like, I remember there was, I don't think she still works on, there was this PA, and one night I just like, I walked out the room and I was like, can you please take me to smoke a cigarette? And she was like, okay. And I sat outside with her and we literally smoked an entire pack of cigarettes. Like, we were out for like 6 hours and we were not supposed to be. And we cried so much together. She cried with me. We were just talking about our lives. I was talking about, and it was the weekend before I got eliminated. I said, I'm going home on Monday. I know I'm going home. I was like, it's just obvious the way they were treating me. I was like, I just know I'm going home, man. I was like, but I'm not mad. Like, I just really want to be, I just want to get out of this situation. I was telling her about my life and we just started crying together. It was like some crazy shit. I'll never forget her. But like, also like, I had that morning, it was Friday was the challenge with 90210. Jenny Garth was a fucking bitch. I couldn't stand her.
Oh, really?
Oh, girl. She was vile. Like, I was just like, Tori was so much more approachable. Jenny was like really weird and like really like, she gave very Republican vibes. I was just like, okay, girl, like, calm down. But the way that the whole acting challenge went, the way like, I felt like I did all my lines right, and then like they were like making me fuck up my lines by telling me to say them again and again and again. Again, can you say it again and again and again? They're like, you're not getting the joke. I'm like, of course I'm not. I've never seen 90210 a day in my life, and I don't want to. The show sucks. Like, it's like, oh, but the culture, there is no culture in 90210. What is it gonna teach me how to do? Put mayonnaise on a sandwich? Get out of here. It was just so stupid. So I was like, girl, I'm going home. And also, like, I knew they were going to use the whole, like, thing of me not wanting to play Grandrea against me. I was like, this is going to be a storyline. They're sending me home. I had mentally prepared myself to go home at that point. But it didn't stop me from going home and feeling fucking depressed for like, literally, it was like, I felt depressed until the show aired and I didn't really have any friends besides like my drag house at the time. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, I started dating this guy and then like, it was just a lot was going on. And like me and this guy were having this really strange, like extremely platonic relationship. And I was just like, I don't know what's happening here. And you know, there's platonic by choice. And then there's like platonic when it's like something seems off. It was like, yeah. It seems off platonic. And then it was like the show came out and then it was like literally everybody was just dragging me. They're like, your skin, you're this, you're that. And I don't even have bad skin. So that shit was weirding me the fuck out. It was just like, Everything was just so weird. I literally felt like in that moment, like I died and was reborn. Like I felt like everything got really bad for a while. And then obviously the Valentina episode came out. Ugh, terrible. It got worse and worse and worse. And I was already like really lonely and like really depressed. So like, I don't know. I think part of that made me really want to go on All Stars just to refine my like self-value. But I felt like I made the mistake of trying to prove myself to other people.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I didn't have to, but I feel like I went on and I did. And I did, but I felt like I pandered. And I felt like I shouldn't have done that.
Speaking of your Valentina episode, while all that was happening, did you ever think it would become such a moment in Drag Race history that people still to this day quote, and they're still quoting on the show now?
I fucking hate it so much. No, I did not think it was going to be something big. Honestly, at the time, I really thought she was a fucking bitch and I thought she was so mean and... like, I was just like, dude, like, what is going on? But then I ended up getting to know her and I was like, okay, you're not that bad. Actually, me and her are very similar people. Like, after getting to know each other, it really was like, oh, wow, we are way more alike than I even realized. I ended up falling in love with her. She's like, great. But at the time, I couldn't stand her, and I didn't think it was gonna be a big thing. And you know, it created this weird narrative that I was like, sort of like jealous of her, like I was like mad that she was succeeding, and I was just like, no, I just didn't think she deserved it. So, yeah. And it wasn't really just that, but it was just like I felt like the judges were eating her ass. I was like, girl, I was like, y'all need to calm down, like. Everything that I said in that room, people were like, oh, you dragged her. I'm like, I didn't drag her. I literally, it was like I was retweeting what the judges were saying. Literally, I was just repeating them. Like, that was what they were saying. The judges were literally like at one point, RuPaul was like, wow, did you stone those tights, Valentina? Like, it was really, that's what they were saying. And who was the guy who was the judge that week?
He's Cheyenne.
Like, Cheyenne
Jackson.
And he was like, wow, you're so gorgeous. You're beautiful. You look like Linda Evangelista. Like, these are things the judges said. I just repeated it. So, you know, I was also mad because she had pulled out a swimsuit that she had already. And then she had Trinity sew on mesh as a peplum. And then that was it. She didn't even make the outfits. I was so fucking over it. But she was smart for that. And I was like, whatever. And, you know, you can't hate the game. It sort of created this narrative that I was like this fiery, hot-headed person. And that I'm like, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is my brand. I'm snapping at people. And I was like, I'm literally such a quiet person, to be honest with you. People think I'm like this crazy party animal like that. I'm like, one, I hate going out. I'm not a people person. I'm very socially awkward. I don't really enjoy being around large groups of people. I'm literally so nice. Like, I literally, like, I don't have to tell you I'm nice because, like, I know I'm nice. But I hated it too because then, like, when I went on All Stars and we had to, like, sell our brand in the stupid fucking canned soup bullshit challenge, that shit should be erased. That episode should be erased.
So that was random.
The stupidest thing I have ever seen in my life, and I stand by it. I literally cringed that day. Like, what is this? And, like, I remember when I was there and I was like, well, I'm making I was like, well, my soup is sweet because I'm sweet. No, you're not. How the fuck are you going to tell me who I am? Well, you're not known for that. Well, good. I'm letting you know what I will be known for, not what you think I'm known for. And it was like this whole thing where people are like, well, I see you more as a fiery person. Good. And I see you dead, but you're still alive.
And so what was your ultimate decision when asked to do All-Stars? Why did you decide to actually do it so quickly after season 9?
I just wanted to get it over with. I said, you know what? They're asking me now. I don't know if they're going to ask me next year. I don't know what's going to happen. Might as well just jump in and do it. And the thing is, it's like, for me, it's all about visual. I know I have personality. I know I make good TV. If I didn't, they wouldn't have asked me. So it wasn't a question of that. It was a question of who's going to make my outfit. That was it. Mm-hmm. And I knew that literally, like, you know, I went and I spoke to all the people I knew who had designers. I was to hit up Shay. I was talking to Sasha. I was talking to Valentina. And I was like, you know, let me know who your designers are. Let's go. Let's do this. And I went. I got everything made. Before I went, I was like, I was talking to the girls about makeup. I was talking to, like, Sasha and Valentina about makeup. I was like, okay, you know, for TV, like, how should I do a makeup like this, like that, like this? And they both, like, helped me out a lot. And then I just went and I did it. And I was like, okay. And I was also like, well, I went to the filming of All Stars literally with, like, 6 packs of, like, gummy edibles. And from literally, like, the first day I got there till, like, the day I left, I was just stoned. And I don't think anybody knew, but there were some people who knew. And my eyes just kept getting bloodshot, and I kept blaming it on my contacts. I was like, oh my God, my contacts. I was like, my eyes are so dry. But I think that was part of it, but I think my eyes were so dry. I was so hot. And there were times where, like, there were a few of the girls who'd be like, are you okay? Or, like, there was one time where Milk was like, you're fucking high. You're fucking high. And I'm like, no, like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not. And I think the only person who found out was Dayla. She was like, I know you're fucking high, bitch. And she was like, it's okay, I am too. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, work. I'm on the same boat then. But it was sort of funny because when we were filming the second episode, I remember Thorgy was like freaking out. And she's like, should I put this on? Should I put this on? Should I do this and do this and do this? And I literally was already just ready. Like, I was just ready. I was ready like an hour before we had to be ready. And I was just like, I'm bored. I was like, there's nothing to do. And she just goes, I don't understand how you're so calm. She was like, how are you just so calm? You're just ready and ready to go. And I'm over here freaking out. And I was like, in my mind, I was just like, what? But in reality, I was just like so stoned that I was just like, which is funny because I think a lot of people who watch the show, like a lot of the commentary I've seen about like that season, like they're like, wow, Aja was so relatable, or she was just so chill the whole season, or she was just like in her own moment. But like, if you watch the season over again, you will see how often my eyes are bloodshot, and you will also see just like a lot of me like, or like you'll just see me like just giving that like slow turn like
it. Going into All-Stars, obviously you had a lot more money to spend on costumes and stuff like that. When in that first episode, did that kind of give you, well, winning the challenge and then lip-syncing for your legacy, did that give you kind of a confidence boost going straight in and getting to the top?
No, I didn't expect him to do it, though. I was like, you know, the thing is like, it's a talent show. I know I have talent. So I was just like, I was like, regardless, like, I think honestly, my talent was messy as fuck, but that's my opinion. I thought it was messy. The fans are entertained by anything. But I had people from the ballroom community being like, that was messy. And I was like, yeah, I know. I was like, yeah, I know. Someone who comes formally from the ballroom community, I was like, oh, when I saw it on TV, I was like, I guess I was so nervous because I was really nervous when we were doing it. We filmed it twice and like my heart was racing and I was like shaking. So like, I'm telling you, I'm a really shy person. So literally I was just like shaking and like, like I'm over here like, ha ha ha. I don't know. It wasn't really a confidence boost. I was just like, I guess like, I didn't come to, let me put it this way, I didn't come with the intention of winning or losing. I just came because I was invited, and I just spent mm-hmm. money that I knew I had to spend. And my goal wasn't to win, it was to wear every outfit that I bought. And I literally wore every outfit but one, and that was my final four outfits. I don't know, I think they wrote me to go home like first or second. They did not expect me to do good. And I just think it's very obvious. Like when you watch the show, you're like, oh. And then at some point, like there's things like me unnecessarily being in the bottom three for the Bitchler episode, like me not winning Snatch Game. Like there's certain things that I see where I'm like, even in the edit, when I was there, it was already confusing to me. Like me not being in the top three for my Amy Winehouse, like, which I'm sorry. You gave me a brown person, a white person, also the only dead diva.
Yeah,
all the divas, meaning that, you know, and with the sensitive circumstances of like surrounding her death and stuff, you know, to be respectful enough to not make a parody of, you know, substance abuse and stuff, you know, but then expecting like a comedy and a dance and a thing, there was some pressure put on me. And I was just like, okay. I was like, y'all bitches couldn't just give me Aaliyah or something? Like, make it easier for me? But work.
I think the way they chose the divas for everyone in that episode, I think it was, for me as a viewing perspective, it looked like they were picking who they wanted to win by giving said parts to certain people.
I mean,
like, once you hear Mariah Carey's part, Chandler doing that, it's comedy, it's everything that essentially the Drag Race looks for, to make them laugh and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but Mariah Carey would never leave the house in a leotard. I don't think anybody called that out. Also, Mariah Carey would never wear that headpiece either.
She's always full gowns.
It's, you know, I mean, it's always picky and choosy. They can drag Sorgi. It wasn't Stevie Nicks enough. Okay, that was a Mariah Carey now.
Yeah.
Oh, like, it's, you know, stuff like that. Like, well, I guess that's what makes TV TV. Yeah, and then the amount of people talking about, like, even till this day, like, after that Studio 54 episode came out, I had literally all these people who partied at Studio 54. Like, I'm talking about, I had, like, fucking 40 and 50-year-olds messaging me, like, girl, you were robbed. They're like, I was at Studio 54 and people were dressed just like that. They wore hair like that. Like they were telling me that they were naming like all these names and references and shit. And like, they were like, yeah.
Yeah. I think I've seen someone recently tagging you in a photo of the her that you had was the her that was born in that time.
Yeah.
And it's like,
you know, there was parts that weren't shown on TV where they were just trying to drag me for the hair and they were trying to drag me for everything. And I was just like, you know, the thing about me is that like, I should have pulled the Tammy Brown, like when Tammy Brown was on All Stars and Michelle was like, you shouldn't have won. She was like, excuse me, I went to fashion school. You're not going to disqualify. She was like, they actually did. I have the book. You want to see it? I was like, oh, I should have done that. But like, I didn't because like, honestly, like I just did. My fear of looking ungrateful or looking like a bitch on television really got the best of me, and I felt like I should have stuck up for myself. But I don't know, they really made me feel like shit. But at that point, I felt like it was an age thing. I felt like they were trying really hard to make it seem like because I was younger, I didn't know what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And even my walkthrough with RuPaul was very awkward. If you realize, it's not in the episode, and they added it as a bonus later, and that bonus was very edited.
Okay.
Very cut down from what it was, because it was awkward where RuPaul told me that her sweater was older than me, and I was just looking at her like, okay, girl, get a new one. Like, I was like, if you don't want me, I was like, if you want to just send me home, just let me know, girl. I will gladly shut the fuck up, and I will just leave. Like, you know, and that's why, like, I said, when they went off on me and they were like, you know, I literally was told to my face, like, you young queens think you know everything, but you don't know shit. And, like, I was just like, okay. And I feel like at that moment, I could have snapped back and I could have said some fucked up shit that would have got put in the final edit. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I didn't. And I you know what? I didn't want to disrespect anyone either. And yeah. I was just still grateful for the platform. And I was just like, girl, I'm just happy to be here. So whatever. I went back to the fucking room. I remember Dayla and Trixie literally being like, what the fuck is going on? Like, they were like, they literally were like, we thought you were going to win. And they were like, this makes no fucking sense.
Yeah.
Trixie was like, you look the best. Like, you literally look the best. She was like, I'm so confused. She was like, I thought it was going to be us. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I did. I actually was so confident that I spent the entire night learning the boss in my hotel room. That's how confident I was that I was going to win. That's why. So like, then I'm there. I was also stoned, and then like I'm having my drinks, and I'm here like, but if you realize, literally by the time they're doing the lip sync, I was like, girl, it's literally again, and it's funny because it goes from being three in the bottom out of nowhere back to two, just so I can call. I remember just being like, I knew I was gonna go home. I was like, there's nothing gonna change that. They're not gonna, you know, the BB was gonna send me home regardless because she's not gonna send home Shangela. And, you know, there was that whole narrative and storyline built around Shangela saving Trixie. Mm-hmm. Which would have never happened if Shangela would never won the Snatch Game.
Yeah.
The storyline was firmly built, and that's how TV works. TV works is that they plant the storyline, you fulfill it. However, I think they were shocked when Dayla sent herself home. I think they thought I was going to come back. I had one of the producers tell me, she literally said, you know, I thought you were going to come back. This is a producer saying this, by the way. It's not even like, you know, really going, I thought you were going to go back. So I also want to make it known like that a lot of the decisions that do happen on the show are the queens. Like, it's not really like the producers are not, like, they can do so much. They, you know, they can plant it, but the queens revolt. They revolt. And I definitely, Dayla said,
I'm going home.
Oh, it was so awkward. It was like 5 minutes of RuPaul legit being confused. Like, I don't know how to feel about this. And it's just Dayla, like, the speech literally was Dayla saying, like, she was like, yeah, this is great and all, but I'm not feeling it. And I was like, I remember being like, this is everything.
Did you didn't expect that then once
I had
while filming, like, she just pulled it out and that was it?
No, but me and Dayla, we ended up sneaking out of the hotel like the day after, and we got like wasted, and like, and we were just like talking so much shit, and she was just like telling me how, like, she was like, did I do the right thing? Like, she was like, I feel like people are gonna be like, why did you give that up? She's like, girl, I gave up $100,000. I'm like, yeah, you did. Mm-hmm. Like, what do I do? And I was like, you know, she was scared that people wouldn't understand. And I was like, girl, who cares? I was like, do whatever you want. Like, you know, girl, you can make $100,000.
Like that.
So I was just like, just fucking do you. And she was like, yeah. Also, Dayla was like a fucking mastermind. Like, she's just like, she was one of my favorite people there. I really got along with her because she just was stood out of everything. And I was sort of the same, where we just stood out of everything. We were to ourselves. We were like self-medicated. And we were just like, we were just like living our lives. And I felt like she helped me get through it.
And from the reaction from your All-Star season compared to your season 9 reaction from fans, how do you think it differed?
Opposite. From the reveal, when the reveal happened, I received a lot of backlash. I received a lot of racist comments. People were fucking photoshopping pictures of gorillas over my faces and shit. And people were like, why the fuck are you here? Like, oh my God, they only called you because Valentina said no, da da da. Like, you were an alternative. I heard that you were like this and that, the other. And it was like, no. What happened was they asked like 5 of us from season 9 to be on. And it was literally like in the same day. Me, okay. Shay, Valentina, Trinity. They asked us 4. Trinity and Shay said no. Valentina and I said yes. And then Valentina, like, I think 2 weeks before filming, she was just like, you know what? She was like, I don't really feel like going through the stress of doing this right now. she was like, I don't think I'm in the mental headspace. I want to work on myself a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, you know, and me and her had to talk about it. And she was like, you know, she was like, I'd rather you go. And like, she was like, you know, we also don't want to have like a storyline surrounding us because like, we don't have nothing to deliver to that. And I was like, yeah, because at the time me and her were like really good friends. Like, I mean, we still are, but we were like, we had just kind of like fixed our friendship and like, we were like not really interested in the idea of everything becoming sort of like, you know, like a game. So we were like, yeah. Okay. So then I was the only one who did it.
Moving on to your music. Obviously you've released 3 EPs and an album now. Has music always been something that you've been interested in exploring, or was it just something after the show that you got into?
So I've been writing music for 13 years now. Okay. I've usually predominantly written rap music, but I've also written a lot of poetry, and I used to write like really corny like pop songs too, but, like, like the really catchy hook stuff. And I don't know, I was like, I've never had the money to make it happen, and you know, yeah. Never thought about trying to pursue music afterward. I always thought that like if I did get involved in music, I would be like a Sia or something, or someone like Sia before Sia was Sia, like someone like an Esther Dean, someone who's just behind the scenes.
And yeah, producer, songwriter style.
Yeah, and I thought I would just do something like that if I ever did involve myself in music. But then I thought, like, you know, I have a platform right now. Like, let me see what I can do, you know, because music is a passion of mine, whether it's been through dancing, DJing, singing. I was in choir when I was younger. Like, you know, all this shit, like, I found a way to always, even through lip syncing, be connected to music. And I just wanted to show my passion for music for the world. But like, I also have such distinct taste in music myself that like, I think that due to the circumstances really of where I grew up, I really don't listen to much pop music, or I don't really listen to much like dance music. I don't really like dance music. And like I my first project In My Feelings was a good hybrid of that pop dance and rap feel. So it was like a mixture of what my aesthetic was plus you know, the type of music I want to make. But I think after that I started to kind of go more just to the music I like. And my music was heavily criticized a lot by, well, more by the Drag Race fans, because it was ironic enough anyway, like my first album Box Office was covered by honestly great press. Like it was like, yeah. Honestly, nobody who had been in, you know, on Drag Race at the time, not just anyone who came out with music was getting covered by like mainstream, like heterosexual media. And it wasn't all about being gay or all about being, you know, in drag. It was like legit about my music. And a lot of the comparisons that they were making about my music were like really uplifting for me, because, you know, they were comparing my lyricism to Jay-Z, to Nicki Minaj. They were those were the comparisons that my music was drawing. And to me, that made me happy, because that's a byproduct of where I grew up. So it's like, yeah. You know, I was really happy about that. But at the same time, I was heavily criticized by the Drag Race fans. People were like just hating on my music. You know, I guess there was also this weird narrative that like I thought I was better than drag, or I thought that I was better than this and the other that was happening. And I don't know, I still to this day, it's so confusing to navigate for me, but like I've sort of just learned to just like, I sort of learned to block it out and just say like, you know what, just because someone else who I don't know says or thinks something about me or what I'm doing with my career doesn't necessarily make it true, because there was this big narrative that I had flopped and my career had just failed. And, you know, it sucks because I kind of started to believe it. But then I realized, I was like, oh, wait, no, that's not true. Like, you know, in the last 2 years, and somebody was saying, they were like, oh, your career in the last 2 years just fucking went down the drain. And I'm like, you know, if that's the case, then why was I the first, like, gender non-conforming person to be listed as a musician on the first Pride campaign for H&M, like, alongside Gus Kenworthy, Kim Petras, Sean Ross? Like, if that's the case, you know, why was I, like, the face of the S'mores campaign for Starbucks, where they literally, in my contract, which I do have, which till this day is one of my highest paying gigs ever, wow. You know, told, oh, we're not, they literally in the contract, it says, we're not booking you for your drag. We just love Aja as a person, and we want you to come, and we want you to be, like, non-conforming. Like, they, to the point where they were like, we want to respect your pronouns. We want to respect your appearance. We want you to show up as feminine, masculine, in between, whatever you want. You know, if I'm a flop, then why is that happening to me? You know,
yeah.
I was getting all these offers to represent brands, to do all these deals. The only person who wasn't featuring it were the Drag Race fans. And, you know, I got a lot of flack. Oh, you lash out at your fans because they don't want to accept you for who you are. And it's just like, no, but I think, again, like I said earlier in the interview, you know, you're not my fans. You are fans of Drag Race.
Yeah.
And you will never know more than just Drag Race Aja. So if you want that, you can purchase the season on Amazon and go watch it. But I am no, and under no circumstance, the same way you're not required or obliged to follow me or support my career, I'm not obliged to pander to what you want from me, and neither do I have to conform to what you want from me, because it's my career. And if you think I'm failing, that's great, but my accolades and successes say otherwise. So you can have your opinions, but I have my facts.
Facts are facts. The community and the Drag Race fandom can be so good in a way, but then on a turn of a dime can be so toxic.
They're fickle.
And yeah. Again, it's a reality TV show. Don't take life too seriously. Don't send hate to people because you don't like what they're wearing, or you don't like what they said, or they weren't funny to you, or they want to release music that you don't like but other people do. That life is life. Just live your life and let other people live theirs.
You know, it's just, but there's, it's just that there's this weird successful, like, template for Drag Race girls, and it's either the queen is touring the world and they're a solo show. You know, one woman show, that was a thing for a minute, like the one woman show.
It's everywhere.
Girl who, most of them weren't comedians, some of them were, and it's like, you know, sitting there selling it as a one woman show, overpriced tickets actually still underpriced, because people don't realize that the followings these Drag Race girls have are bigger than a lot of their fucking underground, even like some musicians and underground stuff, and those underground musicians get paid way more than the Drag Race girls.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, in these girls are touring the world with these, like, doing these shows and, like, sitting there, like, telling a story for an hour, you know, and the people will support that.
Yeah.
It's either that or they're doing, like, the Work the World tour or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the idea of success to the fandom. But I don't want to tour with a bunch of drag queens because I don't classify my act as a drag act. I have been able to play in countries where people don't even really have much drag shows or stuff like that. Like, I've been able to do perform in places, like my music specifically, I've been able to show an element of queer art there that they necessarily didn't have as much visibility to before, and it highlighted maybe perhaps the drag community there or like the non-conforming community. And I feel like not enough people pay attention to how much intersectionality actually goes into my identity, because people only want to label you as one thing. That's been a big thing in the Drag Race fandom for me, is like, people have always wanted to fight over who I am.
Yeah.
You can't fight over who I am. It's like, I am who I am regardless. Like, you, just because you say that I'm this and the other doesn't really make it true, and it doesn't make it anything. There's certain things about me you can't change.
So you said that you don't class your act as a drag act because you're obviously do so much more than just drag. Someone coming to an Aja show, how would you describe the show itself or the act?
Well, also for me, like, so, like, I've kind of publicly stated too, like, for like about 2 years already, like, I'm like, I don't do drag. For me, and you know who's made a similar statement? Miss Fame. And this is why I have a lot of respect for Miss Fame. What I do is not a novelty. This is literally who I am. When I put on makeup, it's not me putting a transformative aspect. I'm not putting on a character. I'm not putting on an act. It's really just me putting on makeup, and I feel comfortable doing so. And I feel very comfortable wearing feminine clothing. You know, and somebody made a comment on the forum, and they were like, this is not how Aja dresses in her day-to-day life. How do you know that? Like, how do you know what I dress like in my day-to-day life? Like, you know, you don't know what I do behind closed doors. You don't know if, like, my man is dicking me down with a wig on. Like, you don't know that. Like, it's just, like, when people make such sumptuous comments like that, it's really, like, you know, and those are things that I just would be like, I guess. But for me, I feel like, I just want to state, I don't have a personal problem with drag. I love drag. I think drag is amazing. Drag made me who I am. Drag has gotten me where I am successfully in my career. Drag has done amazing things for me. But I don't do drag. For me, if other people call it drag, I don't feel offended because I have a lot of respect for drag. But at the same time, for me, it's something different. For me, it's just, this is my identity. This is transfeminism. This is me being a non-binary person and being fluid enough to feel comfortable to put on feminine presentation and say, like, this is not me performing this gender. This is just me. And I think that's what the differentiation for me is. I'm not performing the gender. I'm not performing as a woman. I am just putting on makeup and dressing up femininely. But it is not, my dressing up is not for performance. It is just for my comfortability. And I think, I wish people would realize that. I wish people would realize that you can be both, you can be one, and you can be none. You know, it's been disheartening to see, like, the lack of understanding towards such a queer concept, I guess. But I've sort of come to the consensus that people are gonna be disgusting about it regardless. And I mean, look at the way people treat the trans community already. So it's just like, you know.
Find yourself in saying that you're non-binary, gender non-conforming. How did you discover that? Was it something that you always knew, or did you just slowly realize that during your life?
So for a few years, I really just thought I was trans. I was like, I feel like I'm just a trans woman. And like, I didn't know how to navigate it. And I was just like, okay. And I felt like doing drag to help me navigate that. Mm-hmm. But then I realized, like, although I have had my experiences with like body dysmorphia, like sort of like feeling like I'm not in the right body, I started to grow comfortable in a weird sense. And feeling like I was comfortable in my body, but I still like wanted to change a few things, like from masculine to feminine. I don't know. I started to feel this weird, like I would feel comfortable either way vibe. I started learning more about the spectrum of gender in comparison to just male, female, woman, man. Learning that there was an in-between really helped me navigate who I am, because I realized, you know, sometimes I feel more comfortable being masculine presenting because that it is just what I've been used to my whole life. But a lot of times I do feel more comfortable feminine presenting because it is a safe place for me. And like, not in like, again, not in like a drag way where it's like, you know, I get in drag and I become a different person. No, it's like this, it's just me. I don't know, like, you ever had a shirt that you like? I don't know, you ever had... for me, it's almost like that. It's like, if you ever put on something that makes you feel safe, that's what I feel like sometimes about hair and makeup. And it's not just for stage. Sometimes it is just me at home just doing whatever I want to do. Sometimes it is just me going outside. Like, and I feel like, I almost feel like it's sad that I have to say that, because I feel like it's really nobody's business. And I feel like there's just this narrative. Like, I recently did an episode of The Pit Stop. And somebody sent me a screenshot of like a thread on Reddit, and I was like, oh, just send me the link so I can read it. And I was reading through the comments, and somebody like wrote this whole like analysis, and they were like, Aja can say that she's not in drag. They're like, but you're a fucking drag queen on judging a drag show on a drag this, on a drag platform, wearing costumes and wearing this. And I'm like, well, one, I'm not going to show up to work where, you know, because that's work. I'm not going to show up to work where costume is encouraged, you know, dressed like a pedestrian. You know, nobody would show up to red carpet looking like shit. Well, people have, but like, you know, nobody, you know, if you didn't want to, especially not me. I still love fashion. I never said I didn't like fashion, but it was just like, I just, the lengths that people were going to basically create this narrative that I think I'm better than drag, that I'm delusional, that like, I could not see what these people were seeing. And I was very, I don't know how it's such a difficult concept for them to grasp.
Yeah, it seems to be always things that I've seen on Twitter from the past with yourself is people will send you random messages about either it being your gender identity or your drag, whether you want to perform in or out of female presenting.
Oh.
At the end of the day, it's your art. You present it whatever way you want to, and people appreciate that.
People don't even realize like how much like that whole situation contributed to like my gender dysphoria. Like last year, so there was my release touring for Box Office, my debut album. I was doing it in Europe. It was promoted as a music tour. It wasn't promoted as a drag show. It was promoted as an album release tour. And, you know, when I went there, I had strep throat. And I had 103 degree fever. For you guys, I don't know what that is. That's probably like 40-something Celsius or something.
Something around that.
And I was so sick. And I literally I would try to put contacts in and my eyes would just burn, but I still did like hour long concerts. I could have died doing that probably. I literally was doing hour long concerts while going city to city, receiving like IV treatments for like fluids and for vitamins, still doing my meet and greets, like making sure that like I was like, you know, being clean and being like whatever. I actually didn't know I had strep throat until I got back to America, but I just knew I was like, I had a fever and I was just like, I wanted to make sure I still did the show. I didn't want to disappoint anyone. And it was crazy because, you know, I would have to do sound check. And then by the time they opened the venue, I would only have maybe 45 minutes to an hour until meet and greet. And in that time I would have to eat. And we were flying from country to country. So most times I was just in a more masculine presentation and everyone at the show loved it. Most people were like, this is great. This is cool. But then the people online had something that like, it was like the mixed reviews online were like, oh really? If I paid for a ticket to see Aja and that man showed up, it was like, whoa. First of all, fuck you. You're ungrateful. Second of all, I am Aja, like, and it was things like that that really ultimately made me want to go through like the legal name change process, which I started to change my name on my ID and everything to Aja, because I am Aja. That Aja is not a stage name for me. Aja is my name, and I think that there was like that type of stuff just really contributed to like this sense of like gender dysphoria in me. Because after that, I had a tour in Europe and in Australia, and I landed and we started getting messages from one of the promoters who was navigating a part of our tour. And it was, they were like, we've seen reports that Aja's not showing up to her gigs in full drag. In parentheses, hair, nails, and makeup, and heels. If Aja doesn't show up, if Aja's not going to show up to drag and drag to her gigs, we're going to cancel the entire tour. Wow. And, you know, it was supposed to be booked again as my Box Office Australian tour. And I felt like shit because, like, I wasn't there to put on some, like monkey dance, monkey jump show. Like, you know, I wasn't there to be anybody's clown or jester. Like, I just wanted the freedom to present as I wanted to. And honestly, to tell you the truth, I was always going to be in female presentation at those shows. But being told, like, basically, like, first of all, not just being told you had to show up a certain way, but being told that if I didn't wear hair, nails, heels, and makeup, that I was less of a, that was less than, or less of, like a female presentation, or less than, like, a woman. It was like, what? And that really got to me. Like, I really had a really deep, dark moment. And I started spiraling into a bad depression after that. And 2019 became really dark for me. Like, I had, like, a really weird height of, like, honestly, like, very, very suicidal tendencies, where I was just, like, I found myself in the darkest of all places I've ever been, because it was like I was getting all these great opportunities. I was doing all this thing, but everyone was discrediting it. And everyone was saying it was all about how I look. And it was just about how I look and what I wear. And it made me want to retreat to this place where I just didn't want to be seen. It was just like, if you're not going to see me for what I am, then don't see me at all. And I had a lot of breakdowns where, like, I literally am just, like, falling apart, thinking, what the fuck is going on? Like, am I really doing something that wrong? And it took me a while to realize, like, you know, you're not wrong. These people don't understand you. And, you know, they don't have to. And, you know, just pay attention to those who do. And, you know, truth be told, I lost a shitload of my following. Like, I still lose thousands of followers a day. Since I've decided to focus on my music, I've lost about maybe 50,000 followers on Instagram. Like, people are always like, you're so close to a million. Like, no, I'm not. I'm way far from a million. I'm closer to probably dropping down to 500K at some point than I am ever going to be to getting a million, unless something changes. I've lost, like, thousands of followers on Twitter as well. I get messages all the time, like, you quit drag, I'm so disappointed in you, blah, blah, blah. Those, and then people who see me, like, in my, like, female presentation, like moments, and being like, oh, I thought you quit drag. Oh, and then, you know, there's that whole narrative of, oh, she got hungry. Oh, she was broke, so she knew she had to run back. But that's a really ironic as well. I think that it's funny, because I actually took a lot of time off to sort of center myself, because I didn't want to be in that mindset. And part of that was, like, embarking on the spiritual journey and, like, sort of realigning, really finding out who I am again and, like, being secure in it. And, like, you know, part of that was taking on sobriety, disengaging in, like, extremely promiscuous tendencies, like, really just honing in on me feeling more pure for myself. Like now I've been sober for 6 months. I've been monogamous for 6 months. Like, I've been so, you know, just straightforward to who I want to be. And not because that's the right way or that's just, like, a thing. It was just for me to disengage from vices, to clear my mind. And again, like, I was just in such dark moments and, like, in 2019, and I didn't really have anything to cope with. And at the time, you know, I was in a relationship with my manager, and he was feeling a lot of pressure from the outside of, like, things people were saying. So he was trying to, he was like, you know what, he would say things to me, and, like, hearing these things from the person who's supposed to love you is, like, also, like, hurts as well, because it's like, you know, he was like, you know, well, don't you feel like you're contributing to all your, you know, all the hate that you're getting, or don't you think that you're causing this? And it became sort of like a little bit of that mixed with, you know, why don't you just give the people what they want? If they want that, then why don't you just give them? Why are you making things hard on yourself? Why are you making things difficult? Like, you could be making so much more money right now if you just do what people want you to do. And I was just like, but to me, this is not about money. This is about one, integrity. This is, like, my life. This is, like, my artistic integrity. And it became, well, why don't you pretend to be this, like, drag pop star? And then later on, when everybody's acquainted with that, then you can release this load on them. And it was just like, but then that's the same thing again happening again.
Yeah.
it was difficult. And the only person I really had at the time was Shiloh. Shiloh was my touring hype man. He would come to me to all my shows and he would like hype up the crowd and stuff. And he was the only person who understood in my circle what was going on. My drag family at the time, they were like semi-supportive. Like it was like, it was almost disingenuous though, because I can tell that they really did not understand. They were like, why would you want to give up everything for this? And it was like, I could tell they didn't believe in me, and I could tell that they were not featuring it. And I think that that's why when I was like, I don't think this should be like a thing anymore, they were like, yeah, we think so too. And I was like, okay. And yeah, unfortunately, like it really was like a lot of people just dropped me, left me in the side. I was saying this to somebody the other day, throughout my like struggles with everything and with the whole like drag music navigation, nobody ever really reached out to me or checked up on me or said anything. The only person who really reached out to me was Valentina. She called me and we had a whole conversation about like what my mental health and what was going on in our lives. And Trinity, who came to New York, and every time Trinity comes to New York, she always hits me up and she's like, let's hang out. Like, I want to know what you're doing. And she came here a few months ago and we had the talk too. Like, but other than that, not much other people. Like every now and then, like Shay will text me every now and then, but like not much people really, really gave a fuck, to be honest. And after the fact, and it was ironic too, because there was a lot of queens that when I got all that press for my first album, there were a lot of queens who like hit me up in private and were, another really supportive person was Blair St. Clair. She's very supportive and she was very kind about everything. And she was very like, I love her. She's definitely very
She was very nice.
But a lot of Drag Race girls started hitting me up and asking me for advice. How are you? They're like, you're kind of like trailblazing. You're like setting apart from the brand and making your own thing without the brand. Like, how are you doing it? Like, what's this? And there's been several times where I've met with different queens, like, you know, we'll smoke a blunt or like have a drink and like, you know, we'll talk about it and we'll be like, oh, like, you know, I'll be like, this is what you should do. Or like, this is how I did it. And maybe, you know.
Nothing.
They didn't say nothing to me afterwards. None of them really stuck to what I told them. And, you know, I get it. There's a fear when you've created this whole thing, like surrounded by one, a TV show, like you're like, oh, I'm not going to give it up. And you don't have to. And I did things my own way. And honestly, was it worth it? Absolutely. You know why? I feel like one day Drag Race is going to hit that America's Next Top Model level of just like, oh, another season. And I feel like people don't realize those who didn't create something for themselves outside of the Drag Race brand are not going to fare out as well. And I feel like there are names who will do very well. People like Trixie, people like Alyssa Edwards, people who have really found success outside of the show, Bianca Del Rio. Like those people will do very well because they are very commercial and they are very palatable and sellable.
People need to have a sense of creative freedom.
Yeah.
And I think some people, not necessarily that they can't have that, but they're scared to take that creative freedom because they're afraid that the fans won't take onto it and like it, and then that's them and fighting with their fans or losing the fans because they've done something different. I think that would be probably the reason that a lot of the queens nowadays won't take a risk.
Like, you know, I feel like it's one of the reasons why I like Adore, because like although a lot of people have like are like not really, sometimes people get confused with the stuff that like Adore does, but one thing that I like that she does is that she just stays true to who she is. I feel like she, she's been known for doing music or whatever. She released her first album, which is a little more on the pop side. But I think that she was doing like a transitional album where she was just doing something that I guess her fans wanted to hear. And then she started releasing all these other albums that were different genres, but obviously maybe more of what Adore wants. And a lot of the fans were like, I don't want it.
Yeah.
But to me, it sounded like she was more happier doing what she wanted. And what I liked is that she just kept doing it. everybody can accumulate a fan base. You just have to know who to play to, and you have to just be playing to it. And like touring the world, especially when I was doing music, has taught me that there's people who are gonna follow you and only you, who you will expect, who you won't expect, and then there's times where shit won't go the way you plan. Like last year, I think we played music in like, you know, five of fucking seven continents. Like,
that's impressive.
I played my music everywhere. We did our music in North America, South America, and Asia. Like, I'm also really proud of my touring schedule. Like, people said that I was flopping, but like, I toured Asia on my own. I toured like, you know, Europe, but not just Europe, like North Europe, South Europe, East Europe. Yeah. I toured Lebanon, solo toured Lebanon. I toured Australia. I mean, a lot of people tour Australia, but we did like 7-8 cities in Australia. We did everywhere. We did Belgium. We did all of Scandinavia. We did Helsinki. We did Copenhagen. We did all of America. We did Taiwan. We did Japan. We did Shanghai. Wow. We did Asia twice, actually. Wow, in 1 year. We did so many fucking different places, like places that other people have not gone to.
Yeah, I don't understand how people would consider that a flop. I really don't.
Yeah, and you know, it was crazy. We did Poland. We did, Poland, where literally people are getting beat for being queer right now, which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
And dude, like my Poland show was like fucking nuts. Like, hold up. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, I have to show you this. This is Poland. Like, this is so, this is like not like a lineup of,
that's impressive.
Like,
that's a proper audience. Like, they're there for you. There's no other selling technique there.
Like, you know,
yeah,
me casually flopping, you know, London Pride. I met Lil Nas X in the hotel at this gig. You know, like dancers touring with all that shit.
It's a proper show.
You know, we were playing to, like, wow, this crowd had, like, you know, we were doing festivals, like,
you know. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's crazy. We were in so many fucking places. But I'm looking for this one video. It was one of my favorite gigs that we did that was so unexpected. Let me pull it up. It was in Spain, in Barcelona. This is like a Monday night.
Getting turned up on a Monday night?
Yeah, like.
That's unreal.
And, you know, it was crazy because when I say, like, you never know who's going to turn up and who's going to turn out. There was only two shows that I've ever had that I felt like were like, well, it's over. And one was in Vegas at Piranha.
Okay.
We went. And there was a whole drag show before us. And when we went on, it was to the point where everyone who bought VIP tickets just started walking out the room. And like, there was these like little like white twinks, and they were like, what is she doing? What is this? And like, people just started leaving, and we were just like, we sat on the mic. I was like, you know, those of you who are open to seeing, you know, different forms of queer art, I was like, thank you, you're welcome here. And like, thank you for having fun with us. And those of you who left, fuck you.
Yeah.
And the owner, manager, whatever, wrote this whole like letter to my manager calling us unprofessional, saying that we chased away their clientele, that we were so rude and so difficult. And I was like, no, we literally were like so nice. We were so there the whole time. People were like being shady to us. And all we said was, if you're here, like, let's have fun. And if you're leaving, then fuck you, like,
bye,
you know. And then there was this one time in Portugal, we were in Lisbon, and the crowd is very mixy. Their people were just not, they were like, I think, you know, they were the crowd. They were like, no, we want to see, is she gonna jump from there, and only that, nothing else. You're not allowed to live outside of what you were on Drag Race. Like, it was like,
yeah.
Which, and then I was followed with the critique from the promoter, who was very hot, by the way. He said, I love this show. He said, I think what it is that he's like, I think the problem with you and your music is that if you detach your image from your music, it just doesn't sound gay. And these people, you know, since it doesn't have like sound gay or like gay enough, like they're at the gay club, that he's like, I don't think they would, you know, people here especially would just listen to it without, you know, I don't know. It was something like that. It was like the critique wasn't gay enough. And I was like, you know, my music is not defined by queerness. My music is just my music. Like, I'm not trying to make gay, straight, non-like music. I'm just trying to
talk make about music.
How I feel, like, you know what I mean? But then, like, there's times like Poland where I didn't expect like 4,000 people to show out and just like for a solo show and just like driving in, flying in from different places, jumping up and down. They like, I did an hour long set and they were just like vibing with it. You know, same thing with Spain. Monday night, like there was like 3,000 people there on a Monday night. And oh my God, like I love it when the promoters will put us in a music venue. He put us in a music venue. We had a music opener and I was a headliner. Like, it was like, I love that. Like,
they had
a musician there open and like the people were jumping up and down. And like, you know, there was like mixed people saying like, you know, it was either, I knew you were gonna do this and I loved it, or like I didn't know what to expect and then you did this and I was like, whoa. So like, you know, I loved that because people give it a chance. But there's people
who
won't give it a chance. But I play for those people who are willing to give it a chance and those who have fun. And I know I know that people receive it well because after certain gigs I can see the sales of my music go up. And I see like when people are really buying the albums and when we sell merchandise at the shows, people after the show, they'll be like, where can I find the album? I want to buy the album. And I mean, that's the point of touring, but it definitely reflected. You know, I am fortunate to have a platform to show a bunch of people my music. So I also don't expect everyone who was my fan in Drag Race to just palette my music. Like, I love it. Like, that's unrealistic. But it does give me a room for more people to critique it and for me to see where I want to like zhuzh it up or where I want to fix it up or what I want to grow from.
Yeah.
And you know, to me, this has been a growing experience as well. I've been working on my second studio album since last June. And it's still a work in progress. I literally just got my last beat for the album today. I'm really happy with where my album is going because it's probably my most serious album to date. It's really about my journey from being, I don't know, it's really my life journey. It's my journey to finding peace and my journey to finding where I want to be. My whole album has an undertone of the diaspora. Last year I had these people who played drums, they toured with like Celia Cruz, Mark Anthony, like all those people, and they came into the studio and I had them sing in the Yoruba language 10 songs that correlate to 10 different Orisha, their deities of the Yoruba pantheon, who I felt like showed influence in my life at some point, starting with the deity of Alegwa, who represents like the crossroads, and ending with Oshun, who I'm actually a priest of Oshun in my practice, and Oshun is kind of like the sweetness, but also the bitterness, but also like, she's like the head of witches. She's like the African Aphrodite. But like a witch.
Oh.
And I pay homage to 10 different deities. So I had them sing the 10 different songs and I sent them all to producers with the drums and everything. And I had those producers turn those songs into beats for me. And okay. I wanted to make sort of like an album where it has all these real drumming interludes. And then it'll go into the songs because the songs all sample the chants and the drums and stuff.
And okay.
It's like, it's cohesive, but it all sounds different. Like,
yeah,
it really is interesting. And I'm very happy with how it's coming because I honestly, I've never heard anything like this before. There is a song on there where I kind of like make a big metaphor for how suicidal I felt. I talk about wanting to give up and really contemplating, like, am I going to give up? But then there's also like more fun stuff where, you know, where I grow my confidence back and I'm like, you know, nobody can dim my light. There's a song on there called Black Ariel, which is actually inspired by the whole Little Mermaid Black Ariel controversy.
Yeah.
The song literally is about the irony and the satire of being, wanting to be part of a world that you know you'll never be part of. But then people reminding you constantly and you just still thriving. And I feel like that's related a lot to my life and my career is people telling me like, oh, you don't have a place in music or you don't have a place in this. And them just being mad, but me still just doing it.
Make your own place.
Yeah. And there's just so many, every song has like a specific thing. There's a song in there called Horsewhip and it's literally all about, it's literally all about seeing through the transparency of people, seeing through like how fucking fake people are and how disgusting they are. And it was really inspired by, an issue I had with a friend where someone who I thought I could trust showed their true colors. And it was also inspired by someone, a musical artist who tried to call me out on social media over some stupid shit. And it was someone who I defended a lot through their fucking stupid antics. And this person lost all respect for me. And I wrote a lot about that in the song. So the song is literally, it's literally that. It's just talking about broken trust. You'll never have it again.
So it's safe to say this album is going to be very, very personal to your story.
Absolutely. The album, I think this is the album people are going to listen to and see themselves in it. They're going to be like, oh, this has happened to me before. Or this is like, whatever, this is this. Like, I've really tried to step up my metaphors. I've really tried to step up my lyricism. And I've really tried to step up the things I write about and stop writing about, like, you know, just like flexing about what I want, who I am and how I'm proud. I think it's time for me to be more vulnerable and let people know like what was really going through my mind and like how low I felt. But part of that vulnerability is allowing people to see like how happy I became. And which is what the last track is about. The last track is literally about knowing that I'm worth it and knowing that I worked hard to be here. Dude, it's so deep. I'm so emotional.
Before we stop being deep, I wanted to touch upon the gender identity thing just for people that are out there that might be on the same page as you, but they don't know how to come out the other end. Like, they don't know whether it be talking to their family about their gender identity or just discovering themselves. Would you have any advice for those that are struggling with that?
I think the biggest talk anyone always has to have is with themselves first. You always have to like kind of like feel yourself out. You're not required to come out to anything or anyone at any given time. Everyone has their own time to feel out who they want to be. It took me years to navigate my gender identity. And honestly, till this day, I can't say that I fully have it figured out. But I think part of, especially being like gender fluid, actually, you know what's funny is I came out as trans before I came out as gender fluid, which is ironic. I came out as trans to my mom when I was like 18. And my mom spent an hour talking to me about how hormones cause cancer. And I was like, here we go. I'm very bold with my delivery on like, I would just walk into a room and like be like, this is who I am. But I know not everyone feels like they have that confidence. I think everyone should realize though, you do have a voice, whether you do it or not, you have a voice and it's a loud one. And if you want to be heard, all you have to do is speak up and say who you are and reclaim it. And for anyone who is out there who feels like they are gender fluid or trans, you know who you are. Don't ever let anyone tell you who you are. You are exactly who you feel you are. You don't need to rethink it. You don't need to question it. You just run with it and you reclaim it and you reclaim it over and over again. You wake up and you tell yourself, this is who I am and it's okay. And this is who I am. And this is who I am. You say it over and over again. This is who I am. And nobody can take that away from you. People can take everything away from you.
They can take away things that you've gotten. They can take away material possessions, but they can never take away your identity. They can never take that away. And just remember that.
That is some Azure life advice right there. I like that. Just before we wrap up, I wanted to ask, obviously, COVID-19, with what it is, we can't really do much. We're kind of locked in the house. But do you have any digital shows or performances online that you have upcoming that people can look out for?
So I am like just a natural born hustler, and I'm doing the most. I do have a lot of shows coming up, but I wanted to highlight a few things. One, so what I'm doing now is I'm doing different types of ways of engaging with my supporters and fans, because I really want to have a more personal relationship with them, and I want them to get to know me as a person. So one, I've set up a Patreon. My Patreon is patreon.com/AjaOshun. That's AjaOshun. Patreon is like a website where they can pledge between $5 and $25 and they get access to some behind the scenes stuff. I do Cooking with Aja, which is like a Zoom chat where I'll release the ingredients list prior to. And if you want to grab the ingredients, or if you want to go do a little grocery shopping, even through the fucking COVID bullshit, or get them delivered, whatever your choice is, and you bring them home and we'll go live together and I'll cook, or you can cook with me, you can watch, you can ask questions. And I teach how to make different dishes. I love cooking cultural food especially. So we'll be doing a lot of like Caribbean food, Indian food. We'll be doing like Spanish food. We'll be doing like,
oh, that's cool,
you know, all different types of things. But also I do personalized meet and greets with Patreon. I've also released like all my album sample stuff on Patreon. So they get to see a lot of behind the scenes. And then I've also been doing cameos. I've always tried so hard to stay away from it, but like now, girl, whatever. So you can
gotta make that money.
You can find me on Cameo right now. I'm under the musicians and songwriter section. Cameos are really cool to make, actually. I thought they were gonna be like really weird, but like it's like you can literally ask me to break up with someone for you. You can ask me to. I literally had someone ask me to tell their boyfriend like that they miss them, and I was like, "This is so cute." Like, basically having me deliver the message so you don't have to. So, but you can also catch me doing. I do live Instagram shows from time to time. I do live music. I'll do lip syncing on live because it's easy for the children to palate, and you know, and it's fun, and also because I know I'm good at it, so it's like, why not make some money? So I'll do them for tips. And last but not least, I've also been offering like spiritual readings on Zoom. So like people will book me for like a private spiritual consultation in which we can do a half an hour or an hour long, and we can either do card readings. I can do just spiritual readings. I can tell you about your spiritual guides. I can tell you about, you know, maybe things in your past that how to overcome them, or things that are going to happen to you in the future that you should look out for. Which is something that's been a part of like what I've done all my life. I used to actually work in a shop where I would use divination purposes, like methods to help people with their lives. I just did my last reading last night. It was a really cool reading. Sometimes I'll go on Instagram Live and I'll be like, pick a card. And then like, I'll just tell them about their life. And they're like, what the fuck? Like, but it's like that sort of thing. So yeah, if you're interested in those, you can just DM me like on Instagram at Aja the Queen with a K, or Twitter, Aja Queen, spelled regularly, because sometimes we do that.
And so that is obviously the best ways to support you while we're on this crazy lockdown.
We forgot my merchandise. By my merchandise, I mean my music.
Just as I was about to ask.
my music, you can stream me on anywhere. Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, which I think is the same thing. Amazon, Google, like, girl, the sewer, like, yeah.
And they can obviously buy your albums as well on iTunes and wherever music is sold.
Buy them, I make more money, so please support.
And what about merchandise, like clothing, pins, all that kind of stuff?
My merchandise you can find on my website at Aja Queen, AjaKweeN. I have shirts, I have CDs, pins, and they're all up there. I haven't been promoting my merch as much lately because I haven't came out with new merch in a long time, but we still have a lot of merch there.
Well, that's us. Aja, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day and joining me for this little chat.
Thank you for having me. I feel like I just came on Oprah. Like, I just gave you, like, a life story.
That's exactly what I want. I try and get all the juicy bits from everyone. At the end of the day, I want an interview that people are going to listen to. People want to know these things. They see you on TV shows, but they don't know the real person until they hear it from yourself.
They're going to know that I'm a piece of shit now.
Thank you so much for being so open and honest. Like, you didn't have to go into so much detail that you did, but I'm glad that you did.
Thank you for having me. Honestly, it was definitely fun to have a therapy session.
I think I just might rename the podcast to Therapy with Me.
You should become a licensed therapist.
Thanks. That's a new career path now. Again, thank you so much for joining me. And could you just drop your Instagram and Twitter handles just so everyone can follow you again?
My Instagram is Aja the Queen with a K-W-E-E-N. My Twitter is Aja Queen, Q-U-E-E-N.
And you can also follow us as usual on Don't F It Up on Instagram. And my personal Instagram is Kyle Divine Clark. And we'll be back next Friday with another episode of Don't Fuck It Up. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Bye.